Give us a share on the parsha. I forgot to tell you, he did send me an email about all his Mara Makomos. Myers at about 11. Okay. Next week is Dr. Becker, and then keep tuned. 2 weeks? I don't remember. I'll figure it out. Talk to my people later.
Okay. Tonight is the weekly Chumash share. This is Parsha Shmos. Okay, Rabotai. I'd like to focus on a very brief unit where the Torah makes three psukim, which each one contains an incredible thought. If you look at Perek Bet, Pasuk Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet, and Chav Hei. Perek Bet of Sefer Shmot, Psukim Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet, and Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet, and Chav Hei. What? No. Of course you get chumashim. What a kasha. Take the one with all five chumashim in it. There's plenty. A regular chumash will do. Just the ones. Okay, there you go. You got three of them. You don't need the little ones. Just get the big ones with the chumash in it and the rashi. Okay.
Okay, Rabbi.
Okay. Let me just tell you where we're up to as these psukim are developing. The Torah begins by describing the explosion of Am Yisrael. Vayifritzu, vayirbu ma'od, vati malei ha'aretz otam. Paro getting very concerned about the explosion of Am Yisrael and gets his advisors together and recognizes I have to do something to control them. So he enslaves them, and he also makes proposals as to how to perhaps avoid or slow down the population explosion by killing all the boys, either as soon as they are born or throwing them into the Nile River. The Torah then stops at that point and tells us that an individual from the family of Levi married Bas Levi, and Moshe is born. The Torah describes Moshe's birth, the fact that he is raised in Paro's chambers. He then goes out amidst his brethren. He notices that the Jews are being tormented by the Egyptians. He sees one instance and he reacts. He kills the Egyptian. A second occasion takes place where he sees a Jew hitting a Jew. According to Chazal, it's Dasan Vaviram. And what happens? He recognizes that he's in trouble. Somebody had witnessed the previous murder. And he flees Mitzrayim and goes to Midian. He meets a woman by the name of Tzipporah, as she is tending to the flock, and he helps water the flock. Tzipporah invites him back to the house. Yisro, his eventual father-in-law, was very impressed with him. He eventually marries Tzipporah. They give birth to their first child, Gershon. And here is we are. Here is where we are. Pasuk Chav Gimel, Chav Dal, and I'm just going to read the three psukim. Vayehi bayamim harabim haheim. Many days had passed. Vayamat melech Mitzrayim. The king of Egypt died. Vayeyonchu b'nei Yisrael min ha'avodah. And Am Yisrael were moaning and groaning from the workload. Vayizaku. And they screamed, they petitioned. Vatal shavatam el Elohim min ha'avodah. God heard their complaints, their suffering as a result of the workload. Vayishma Elohim et nakatam, vayizkor Elohim brito, et Abraham Yitzchak b'ez Yaakov, Vayar Elohim et Bnei Yisrael Vayeda Elohim. Three very simple psukim. But I entitled this particular shir tonight is how a story is told through absolute silence. So the silence that is conveyed to us is in the first three words of this unit. Vayehi bayamim harabim ha'em. Many days had passed. It's not just many days, it's many years. And we have no description of what is taking place during those many years. There is no doubt that that the last episode, which describes for us Moshe fleeing Mitzrayim and going to Midian, we know exactly how old Moshe is. He's 20 years old. When he arrives now in chapter 3, in the very next unit, when he is tending to the flock, and he somehow gravitates to a mountain called Har HaElohim, the mountain of God, according to Chazal, it's Har HaMoriah. And what happens? He sees this burning bush, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu initiates the process of conscripting Moshe to become the leader of Am Yisrael. How old is he at that particular time? 80 years old. We know that because he only lived 40 more years from the time they left Mitzrayim. So he's about 79 or 80. So 20 years or 60 years lapse, and we have no indication as to what's happening. Plus, we really have no idea as to when in the enslavement process Amram decided to marry Yocheved and give birth to Moshe. The Torah is very, very silent as to how long this particular span takes place. The Torah writes at the beginning of the parsha, Ve'ele shmot b'nei Yisrael haba'im Mitzrayim. Am Yisrael came down to Mitzrayim. We know, according to tradition, that we were there for 210 years. So we are, when Moshe is born at the beginning, when Moshe is now summoned by God, that's year 209. So what happened during all of those years from the time that they came down to Mitzrayim, all of the tribes die, Yosef dies, they are now enslaved. We're not exactly sure what time they were enslaved, but one would have to assume it's been quite a bit of time. And the Torah says absolutely nothing. All it does is tell us, Vayehi bayamim harabim haheim. So the Rav once suggested that this is a device that the Torah uses from time to time to convey something without necessarily sharing with us even one detail. What is the Torah trying to convey to us? That the life of the people of Am Yisrael at a time of slave, for them the passage of 60 years, 80 years, 150 years meant absolutely nothing. Because a slave has no consciousness of the medium of time. Time plays zero role in a slave's life. Time plays everything in our lives, because the more effectively we manage time, the more we can accomplish. So our employer will be delighted with us, and that means a bigger check the next time around. And if I waste my time, my employer is going to be very annoyed with me, and he'll reduce my salary or eventually fire me completely. So what happens to myself, my family, my community is all affected by time. However, the life of a slave is governed. Please open up for a second to Parshat Ki Tavo. In Dvarim, chapter 28. chapter 28. This is part of the lengthy Tochecha, the rebuke of Am Yisrael. It is chapter 28, verse 67. Baboker tomar mi yitein erev. Uba erev tomar mi yitein boker. When it's daytime, what will the slaves say? The people who are in galut, enslaved by others, what will they say? Might as well be nighttime. At night, what will you say? Might as well be tomorrow morning, because time, the amount that you produce as a slave, has zero impact on your welfare and your family's welfare. Everything is accrued to the slave master. So when a person, Vayehi Bayamim Harabim Hahein, I want you to know that I could have told a major story. I tried maybe give you some details, what happened to Am Yisrael at that time. But it's totally insignificant, because life dragged on every single day. A week passes, a month passes, another year passes, a decade passes, a century could have passed, and absolutely nothing changes whatsoever. The only thing that is the constant is Vayeyonchu b'nei Yisrael min ha'avodah. People are moaning as a result of the workload. So a span of a couple of hundred years, give or take, whatever it is, 20 years, 40 years, not sure exactly how this time period is. But it's definitely at least 60 years. At least if you want to focus on the birth of Moshe and his selection by Hakadosh Baruch Hu, at least 60 years. And yet, there is no need for the Torah to present to us what is happening to Am Yisrael, because we can use our imagination. They are slaves, and as a result, the time factor means absolutely nothing. The halacha recognizes that a slave is exempt from mitzvot aseh shehazman grama. So if you'll take the sheet for a second. Every slave in Jewish law has to undergo partial conversion. I'm talking about Gentile slaves. There cannot be a Gentile influence working in our house on a permanent basis. So if a Jew acquires a Gentile, he has 12 months to convince him to either convert, or I'm going to sell you to a Gentile, and that's it. Those are the old, that's the choice given. So the Rambam writes, Ha'eved, this is Shulchan Aruch rather, Ha'eved ha'nulkach me'ovei kachabim, omrim lo, Ritzoncha shetikanes lichlal avdei Yisrael. Would you like to enter the category of a Jewish slave? V'tihiyeh mehaksherim, and then you'll be, a perfectly valid Jew. Oh no, or not. Im ratza, if he should decide to do so, modin lo ikre hadas, you inform him of the essential principles of Jewish law, mitzos mitzos kal chamuros, the anshon uscharon kemoshi modin es hager. And then he immerses, umatbilin, and so on and so forth. If he doesn't, so the next sif, the Shulchan Aruch says, you sell him to a Gentile. Now, the halacha is that this slave who is obligated to observe every single mitzvah is exempt from mitzvot aseh shehazman grama. So the technical source of that particular halacha, that he's exempt, is learnt out from the status of women. Women are exempt from mitzvah sasesh's man grama. And without going into too much detail, the Gemara has a drash in which we compare, because the word lo appears by something for a woman when they write a get. The chasav lo, sefer kritut. So the Gemara attempts to learn out that you can acquire a Gentile slave with a document, with a shtar. When a shtar, you learn it out from get. Again, the halacha is not my concern now. So just as they compare women to slave in terms of the acquisition or divorce, so too a slave does the same thing. He can be acquired and set free with a document. It's called a shtar shichra. You write a document, he becomes free, and then he is a full-fledged Jew. Full-fledged Jew. Obligated to observe every mitzvah. So another Gemara says that, you know what? Just as women are exempt from time-bound mitzvot, so too avadim are exempt from time-bound mitzvot. So the Rav commented in this theme. There might be a gzeirah shavah, but the reasons are totally different. Why might women have been excused from mitzvot aseh she'zman grama? Because of the parental role that they fill. And to expect them to do a particular mitzvah at a designated time, when they have responsibilities to a family, particularly to children, is a little too challenging. That has nothing to do with an Eved Kenani. He's exempt because the concept of time means absolutely nothing to him. When he works for his master, nothing is improving the lot of his children, of his wife, nothing. So it's a totally different understanding. And that is what's happening to Am Yisrael. Time means absolutely nothing. And it is conveyed to us in this at least 60, in all probability, a lot longer time period under those three words. Vayehi bayamim harabim hahem. I'll give you another illustration where the Torah tells us something and it gives evidence about a time period, a very lengthy one, 39 years. The Torah didn't say one word about those 39 years. Go to Bamidbar chapter 19 for a second. Bamidbar 19. Another illustration where the Torah tells a story without giving one documented evidence of what happened at that time. Bamidbar chapter 19. It's a very famous parsha, at least the opening parsha. It's Parsha Chukas. And it tells us about the laws of Parah Aduma. That's what chapter 19 are all about. And it's a very strange placement of this mitzvah. Anytime, I told this to you in another Chumashir, whenever there is a mitzvah inserted in the midst of a narrative, you have to ask the question, why did God record this mitzvah in the middle of that narrative? There's got to be a reason for it. So where are we in terms of the narrative? Where are we? Well, we know exactly where we are. The Meraglim episode took place in Parsha Shlach. Immediately thereafter, Korach rebellion takes place. Korach, because Korach thought this is an excellent opportunity to challenge Moshe's authority, because he didn't exactly get what we thought he would get. Like he got by the Chet HaEgel, complete atonement. By Meraglim, he didn't get complete atonement. Every adult between 20 and 60, every male between 20 and 60, is going to die out. That's where we are. Now, chapter 20 picks up in year 40. Year 40. So when did the Meraglim take place? Year 1.5 after Yetzias Mitzrayim. A year and a half. 6 months after the first anniversary of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The narrative picks up in year 40. Miriam's going to die. Aaron's going to die. Moshe's going to die. This is all year 40. So what happened in the remaining, the interim 38.5 years? The Torah doesn't say a word. But it communicates something by the placement of this particular mitzvah. The mitzvah of Parah Aduma was given in before year 1. If our point of departure is Yetzias Mitzrayim, which it is, Parah Aduma was given 13 days before the first exit, before the exodus of Mitzrayim, before the exodus. When God told us on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, 15 days before, that we're to bring a Korban Pesach, the next day he told them, I want you to take a Parah Aduma, and anybody who's Tameh has to be sprinkled in order to cleanse themselves. So we know when the mitzvah of Parah Aduma was given. But it's recorded in Bamidbar chapter 19. Why? Because it's telling us a different story. That those 38.5 years, the Jews lived their lives in the spirit of Parah Aduma. What do I mean? Parah Aduma is the chok which nobody can really comprehend. So why do we observe Parah Aduma? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked us to do so. During those 38.5 years, not one communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. Not one. Not one communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe. Zero. And yet, they survived. How did they survive without any direct guidance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How did they survive? They conducted themselves like the Paraduma. God tells us to do something, we do it. We don't ask questions. As opposed to the first year and a half, which was highlighted and marked by controversy and challenge one after another, there were no challenges during those 38 and a half years. So the Torah tells us a story in silence, hinting at it by the placement of what? Of the mitzvah paraduma. That's why it's there between year number 1.5 and year number 40. Those 38 years are characterized by a life emulating the values of the paraduma. So sometimes the Torah itself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has a way of communicating to us something that may have taken place for a lengthy period of time without actually using words. Just the trigger. Here the trigger is, Vayhi bayamim harabim ha'em, and they were slaves, Vayeyonchu b'nei Yisrael min ha'avoda. Now we can use our imagination about the life of a slave. Time becomes totally insignificant. And hence, nothing terribly exciting is indeed happening. And in that situation, 38 and a half years go unrecorded in the text. No dialogue, no communication. And we draw a conclusion that Am Yisrael lived their lives based on a commitment to the value of Paraduma. Point number two about these psukim. There is a very famous halakha which guides our davening every single day of the year. I should say, according to many, every day of year, and according to other authorities, every day aside from Shabbos and Yantiv. And that is the spirit of smichut ge'ula l'tfilah. That when we daven Shmona Esrei in the morning, we can't just start saying Shmona Esrei. If you walk into shul late, and you want to daven with a minyan, you cannot. You have to at least say Birchot Shema, Shema, and conclude the end bracha of the Shema, Baruch Ato Hashem, Goal Yisrael. And then you start Hashem Sosai Tiftachofi Agiti Lasecha. It overrides every other value and consideration of davening. It's more important, Tefillah B'Tzibur, it's more important than anything. To be somech geula l'tfila. How do we know that this halacha exists? How do we know it exists? So, I'll show you the source which Rashi quotes. Open up to page number 4 for a second. Rashi's comment on the Gemara in Masechet Brachot that tells us about the institution of smichut geula l'tfila. That's Rashi's comment. And he tells us, usmichat geula l'tfila Rimza David b'Sefer Tehillim. Page 4 of the bracketed Rashi. David HaMelech alludes to it in his book of Psalms. Dichsiv, because the last verse of chapter 19 of Tehillim is Hashem Tzuri v'Goali. God is my Redeemer. The whole pasuk is Yiu l'ratzonim refi v'hayon libi l'fanecha Hashem Tzuri v'Goali. We say chapter 19 every single Shabbat morning. Lamnatzeach mizmor le David, Hashemayim misaprim kvod el, and it ends Hashem tzuri v'goali. V'samich le, and the very next pasuk in the Psalms is chapter 20. Ya'ancha Hashem biyom tzara. We say this paragraph every day except Shabbos and Yantiv, right after Ashrei, before Uval Tzion. So Ya'ancha means God will respond. The assumption of responding is that what did we do? We made a request. That's what tefillah is. So after you say Tzuri v'Goali, then you can go ahead and what? And make a request. That's the technical source quoted by everybody, not only by Rashi. So the Rav tried to broaden the horizon and understand the philosophy of Smichas Gula L'Tfilah. And he believes that our psukim are the real origin of this particular halakha, smichus gula l'tfila. This was a lecture given at University of Pennsylvania. I had the pleasure of driving him to Pennsylvania at the time. In the mid-70s, he was on a college campus kick. And he spoke in Rutgers on Torah and humility. He spoke over there. He spoke in a variety of places. And there he spoke about prayer and redemption, a halachic equation, smichut geula l'tfila. There were 1,500 people there, and it was just an outstanding lecture. So to capture the essence of it, he said as follows. Am Yisrael, as I just indicated, are in Mitzrayim for 210 years. What were they thinking as to how they are going to get out of this situation? We're all slaves now. Okay, make believe we're slaves. Don't you think there was ever a time during lunch? What else are we going to talk about on Shabbos over lunch? How are we getting out of here? How are we going to terminate this? So perhaps they may have talked about a slave rebellion. There have been some of those in world history, slave rebellions. Maybe that would work. Maybe they thought we can do something to somehow bribe our slave taskmasters. With what they had to bribe, I have no idea. But some of them may have suggested, you know what? It's only this king, only this paro. Don't worry, they'll get another king. When he dies, everything's going to come back to normal again. So what does the Torah tell us? Vayhi bayamim harabei mohem, vayamos melech Mitzrayim. Indeed, the king died. Did anything change? No. Vayehanchu b'nei Yisroel min avoda. For the first time in the 210-year history, vayizaku, they prayed to God. For the very first time. Up until now, they actually believed that they have alternate strategies. They have spoken about, maybe they even attempted some. Nobody knows because we have no record. But it is hard to imagine an enslaved people not ever thinking about initiating action to terminate their status. It's hard to imagine. Think about the history of other slaves. In America, slaves at least tried to. So there were some rebellious slaves. There was talk about it. People, it didn't just go on for the eternity in American history. It was long enough. But eventually, people started doing something about it. It's impossible to imagine that they didn't do something about it either. But whatever they may have attempted was a total disaster. Nothing succeeded. And the Torah shares this with us. Vayhi bayamim harabim bahem. Many days passed. Things may have changed. Vayamos melech Mitzrayim. But one thing remained a constant. Vayeyonchu b'nei Yisrael minu avoida. Finally, Am Yisrael come to the recognition that there is only one route that might be successful. That's to turn your attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayizaku. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu answer in the year 210? Why didn't he answer in 60? In 80? In 150? Why couldn't it go on like he promised initially 400 years? As soon as they engaged in prayer, automatically, next pasuk, Vayizkar Elohim et Brito. At Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, God suddenly remembers the covenant that they're going to be slaves. Va'achareichein yitzu b'ruchush gadol v'gam et hagoy asher yavodu don anoichi. I'm going to judge that nation that enslaved them. So as soon as they pick up their voices and direct their attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, immediately va'yishma Elohim et na'akatam. The essence of this experience is the philosophy of Smichus Gula L'Tfila. Not just that two psukim happen to be next to each other, said the Rav. It is the very essence of what prayer is all about. We have to go through the exact same experience that the Jew in Mitzrayim experienced in order to achieve his desired need. His need was Geula. So as soon as you come to the recognition that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can resolve my predicament, just where did that happen? In Mitzrayim. Because as soon as they pray, all of a sudden God hears it, and the next thing is God comes to Moshe. Let's get this thing moving. I want you to go to Mitzrayim, and I want you to go to Paro and say, Shalach et ami v'yavduni. All of a sudden, everything is getting set up in order to lead to Geula. Why? Because if you come to a recognition that I cannot solve my issue alone, it's not going to be a slave rebellion, it's not going to be a change in administration, nothing other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then Geula comes. So every single day, before we stand in the presence of the Holy One, blessed be He, we have to go through our own Geula experience to come to the recognition that Am Yisrael, that same recognition that Am Yisrael did then. So as I am about to stand Shmoneh Esrei and ask for the Refuah Shleima for all of the people who we have in mind in the Bracha Refuenu on a day-to-day basis, we have to acknowledge that as good as the two doctors sitting right here, and three doctors, any other doctors? Three doctors, four doctors sitting right here. The four doctors sitting right here, as good as they are, they cannot be affected without the assistance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rofei Chole Amo Yisrael. So in these psukim, what is happening here is the philosophical underpinnings of why our prayer is structured as Geula, Smichut Geula Letfila. And here, you just read the psukim. Vayeyonchu b'nei Yisrael, vayizaku. Next, Vatal Shavasom El Elohim, Vayishma Elohim et Nakatam. Next paragraph, next chapter. Moshe, let's get going. Let's get things rolling. None of this happened for 210 years because Am Yisrael never raised their voices to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Always dreaming, contemplating, conspiring that it might be something else. Is there any evidence of this? Of course not. This is a silent story. We are called upon to use our imagination. What would they have thought about that in year 50? What did they think about in year 70? It's already 100 years. Nobody is talking about getting out of here. I'm just going to accept what's going on. Yeah, that's what they said. Yeah, okay. Either they accepted for some bizarre, strange reason, or they thought of things and they were crushed in their attempts to leave it. So, idea number two that emerges from these psukim is the incredible power of tefillah, and that it works rather rapidly, at that particular time. And then, point number three is on the last pasuk of this very brief unit. Vayar Elohim et bnei Yisrael Vayeda Alehem. Vayeda Elohim. God saw Bnei Yisrael, Vayeda Elohim. Those last two words are one of the most difficult psukim to explain. And God knew. Vayeda Elohim. God knew. What does that mean? First of all, the whole phrase, the whole pasuk makes no sense. Vayar Elohim et Bnei Yisrael. Means up until now he wasn't seeing Am Yisrael. Up until now he wasn't doing anything. So there are many parshanim that try to explain what this pasuk and particularly the last phrase means. Take a look at Rashi. Vayeda Elohim. Natan Alehem Lev. He focused his attention on them. Velo He'elim Einav Mehem. He did not remove his attention from them. Okay? Doesn't really add a lot to what exactly does it mean, Vayeda Elohim and Vayar Elohim et Bnei Yisrael. So I would like to suggest that this closing of this unit is telling us a second perspective as to why HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks that the appropriate time to set into motion Geulah is right here, right now. In addition to what? To the fact that they pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Something else happened. If you go to chapter 2 for just a moment, so, as you well know, the Torah gives very petty few details about the life of Moshe. Very few details. From the moment that he was born until he somehow is walking around, like I said, he's approximately 20 years old. Nobody knows what's going on. But the Torah tells us, you know, two or three episodes, and that's it. And one of them is it described in Pasuk Yud Aleph and Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayigdal Moshe vayetze el echav vayar besiblotam vayar ish mitzri. Then in Pasuk Yud Bet, vayifen kovakar vayar ki enish. So everybody interprets that the great ma'ala of Moshe here was that he actually reacted to somebody who was suffering. That he saw the act of someone who was suffering. So, of course, that's true. But I want to put the emphasis on the word vayar, which points out three times. Vayar ish mitzri. Make ish ivri. Vayifen kova vayar besivlotam. Vayar kienish. Now what does kienish mean? Everybody translates that he looked. So the simple pshat is he looked around. Ooh, nobody's there. That's the simple pshat. Rashi of course cites the Midrash that he looked into his future, that there would be nobody deserving, worthy of saving him. If he was about to give birth to Dr. Becker, of course I wouldn't have killed him, says Moshe Rabbeinu. I want Dr. Becker to come out. But I saw there's no Dr. Becker coming. So I killed him. I want to suggest that the Vayar Ki Einish has nothing to do with the mitzris or somebody looking. It means he didn't notice any Jew doing anything. So what was Moshe's great contribution at this time? God, somebody is being beaten up. And there are no good Samaritans. Nobody wants to play. It's just like describing our generation. Our people today. And it happens so often. You read about in the papers, you see it on the news. Somebody's attacking the subway. Not a person lifts their finger. Not a person. I was told there's only one state in the union that has a mandatory Good Samaritan law. You can be prosecuted if you don't respond. Oregon. Only the state of Oregon has a mandatory, if you don't respond, you can be prosecuted for violating Lo Samar Adam Reacha. Don't stand around with somebody else's, except for Am Yisrael. We have it. Lo Ta'amod Adam Reacha. So Moshe is the first one to recognize there's nobody doing anything. Everybody's watching this mitzri beat up and another Jew beat up. And I am going to react. Vayar ki einish. Nobody else is reacting. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to do the same vayar. Vayar Elohim et Bnei Yisrael. If a member of Am Yisrael is finally willing to stand up for other members of Am Yisrael, I too am prepared to stand up for members of Am Yisrael. And as Rashi says, Nasan Lev Aleihem. He suddenly decided to do what? To pay attention to them. Doesn't mean he didn't see them before, but to pay attention. Why is he going to pay attention to what's happening to them? because they decided to do something about it themselves. Somebody decided to do something about it himself. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu often governs our behavior based on the way we interact with people. That's a message we reiterate thousands of times during the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, prior to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. We always do that. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu will react to us the way in which we treat one another. So three times the same verb appears in Moshe's reaction. Vayar b'sivlotam, vayar ish mitzri, vayar kiyen ish. If I have to stand up, vayachet ha-mitzri. I'm not going to be part of those Jews who are described vayar kiyen ish, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you are prepared to do that, now, even after all of these years, finally somebody has responded. Hence, Vayar Elohim b'nei Yisrael, Vayeda Elohim. God emulates the Vayar of Moshe, Natan Alehem Lev, Velo He'elim Einav Mehem. He does not abandon them at all going forward. So these three psukim have three themes. One, theme number one, that a story can be told without providing any details, and it asks us to use our imagination, what is happening, to paint in the details. Two, the philosophical underpinnings of the halacha of smichut gula l'tfilah. And then the reaction, the parallelism of the munachim, the way it's used today, munachim kfulim, the repeated use of the word vayar in a span of two psukim, and then interesting that HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses the same thing to see the connection between Moshe's reaction and subsequently HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Thank you, Shukriya.